At this time, I'd like to convene a public comment session. The procedures of the board allow for a public comment session during each meeting. Each speaker is allotted 5 minutes to address the board. Before the speaker begins, I should mention that the tradition of the board has been to listen closely to what speakers have to say and ask questions only as necessary. I'm sure the speaker is happy to avail him or herself outside of the board meeting for a question and answer session as appropriate. We appreciate the fact that we have guest speakers today, a total of 6, and we look forward to hearing from them. So first, I would like to call on Laura Jungles.
Can I begin?
Please.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Laura Jungles, and I'm a UIC gymnastics alum. I'm here today because the UIC gymnastics program and thereby the coaches' contracts are being terminated. They're not being terminated as part of an overall effort to reduce costs. In fact, the end objective will actually increase the cost of athletics at UIC. Instead, they're being terminated as part of an initiative to reduce diversity in athletics and reduce opportunities for current and future student athletes. Why should you care? The majority of the athletic funding comes from student fees and state funding, neither of which had any input in this decision. As the governing body of the university and the body responsible for ensuring the proper use of funds, this decision falls under your purview. UIC prides itself on its diversity and, in fact, is one of the top 5 most diverse campuses in the nation. Athletics are the front porch to the university. As a diverse institution, athletics should mirror that value. Eliminating the gymnastics program to focus on fewer sports reduces diversity in athletics. UIC and the NCAA both value and include as part of their mission and core values providing opportunities for students and student athletes. If you believe that athletics at the college level is important, then ensuring that those opportunities exist for student athletes is equally as important. UIC provides a unique urban environment and has a unique student body. Many of the students work or have families. They're interested in a different college experience. They have interests outside the traditional big sports, such as football and basketball. The UIC Athletic Department plan is to spend more money on fewer sports like basketball with the hope that it will drive success and ultimately student attendance at games. While this approach has been successful in rural areas or areas with more homogeneous populations, it is challenging in an urban environment. Other urban schools similar to UIC have not experienced as much success implementing this strategy. Instead, UIC should consider a unique approach to athletics, offer students opportunities to support a broad range of athletic teams, focus more on sports that are universally popular to increase student attendance, sports like gymnastics and soccer. UIC should draw on the large fan base of the local community to increase attendance at athletic events and strengthen UIC's public profile. The gymnastics teams at UIC have been incredibly successful over the years. The UIC women's gymnastics team has had 10 NCAA tournament appearances and won 12 conference championships. They've achieved this with less funding than other sports. For example, basketball has been to three NCAA tournaments and won 2 conference championships. The women's gymnastics team has also had a 100% graduation rate over the past 10 years. The average graduation rate at UIC is about 60%. In the last season, 6 female gymnasts had perfect 4.0 GPAs, and 10 were Scholastic All-Americans. The men's gymnastics team has won UIC's only NCAA team championships and paved the way for all sports at UIC to compete at the Division I level. The men's team has had Division I tournament appearances 10 times. They also had the highest team finish at Division I NCAA championships. Last year, UIC hosted the 2018 NCAA Men's Gymnastics Championships and was the only UIC sport represented at the NCAA finals. There are also many successful men's gymnastics alums. Some of them are small business owners, doctors, engineers, and more. As you can see, the gymnastics program has historically and consistently represented the priority of excellence in the classroom and the competitive arena. Every season, the gymnastics teams compete against top-tier schools like LSU, UCLA, Arizona, Nebraska, Michigan, Ohio State. The UIC gymnastics, women's gymnastics team competed in front of 15,000 people at Utah, potentially the single largest crowd that any UIC team has ever competed in front of. These teams are helping to spread the UIC name across the nation, arguably even more than any other athletic program at UIC. Gymnastics student athletes have been and will continue to be the best ambassadors of UIC in the academic, athletic, and community domains. The current UIC athletic strategy is to reduce diversity, to focus on fewer teams and fewer athletes. Focusing more resources on fewer people is the definition of elite. And unless you believe that college athletics should just be about the top 25 football or basketball schools, then reducing diversity and opportunity in athletics for reasons other than necessary cost reduction or lack of interest simply does not make sense. UIC gymnastics embodies exactly what college athletics is supposed to be about, and the program and coaches' contracts should be reinstated. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jungles. Our next speaker is C.M. McCoy.
Good morning, I'm Colleen McCoy. I spoke to you in May down in Springfield, and I'm here again today to once again talk about the symbol of the University of Illinois in Urbana. I graduated from U of I 30 years ago. And believe it or not, my first job was actually here. I used to work at the hospital on Wood Street. So this is like being back in the old neighborhood. So the reason why I created my petition, which I presented to the board today, is because I saw an article in the newspaper in September stating that the university is thinking about creating a mascot. We've never had a mascot, and I hope that we never will. My petition states as follows. The University of Illinois will recognize the Peoria tribe as the descendants of the Illini Confederation. The University of Illinois will create a meaningful relationship with the Peoria tribe of Oklahoma. The University of Illinois will enter into negotiation with the Peoria tribe to honor the Peoria people, which may include a scholarship program for all qualified members of the Peoria tribe, a Peoria selected by the Peoria tribe, who would be a member of the University of Illinois' Board of Trustees, the establishment of outreach program, which will address the needs of the Peoria tribe. The University of Illinois will respectfully request the Peoria tribe to consider the continued usage of the Fighting Illini as the title of the University of Illinois' sports teams. If the Peoria tribe is amenable, the committee of the present and former Chief Illiniwex will meet with the Peoria to respectfully request if the Peoria tribe would be willing to consider a new incarnation of Chief Illiniwek, which may include a new tribal costume and regalia that is representative of the Peoria tribe. The University of Illinois will request if the Peoria would be willing to honor the university with a new stomp dance that would be performed by a member or members of the Peoria tribe who would receive a scholarship to perform the dance and who would be an ambassador and liaison for the Peoria tribe at the University of Illinois. If the University of Illinois is unwilling or unable to create a meaningful relationship with the Peoria tribe, the University of Illinois will retain the title Fighting Illini, but will not have a symbol of any type that represents the Illini Confederation, nor will the University of Illinois create or allow a mascot. Please know that I was invigorated last night watching the Native Americans program and seeing the commendable representation of the University of Illinois in this program. Learning about the Cahokia has inspired me today to speak for the people, the Native people of this land, who want to be recognized. Our heritage is rich, and it deserves our recognition, and it deserves to be perpetuated into the future. I see a future where this will occur. Chancellor Jones, I know that you have personally done an outstanding job by inviting the Peoria to Indigenous Persons Day, and I commend you for that, sir. Thank you so much. I appreciate everything that the board is doing to help bridge and to create a relationship with the Peoria. It is so important to the people of Illinois and the 426,000 alumnus of this university for them to know that we are proud of a symbol of our state. We never had a mascot. We never will.
We are proud of our Illini heritage. We're proud of the peoples of this state. We stand on the earth that they stood on. It is important to me that the university recognize the Peoria. Chancellor, am I allowed to ask you if there's been any sort of progress with any sort of facilitation with the Peoria? Am I allowed to ask you that? You can say anything.
No, out of respect, I stand. Yes, I'm in regular contact with the Peoria tribe. In fact, I was just on the phone for about 45 minutes with Chief Hopper last week. I've sent a delegation of folks from the university out to visit with Chief Hopper 3 or 4 months ago. And we did invite him to participate in Indigenous People Day because we thought it was very important that he be present, but he had a prior commitment that he couldn't make it. And all of the things that you've mentioned, I'd just like to say since I'm up, we've never talked about doing away with the Fighting Illini. That has never been a question that I supported. We are not embarking upon naming a new mascot. There's no process in place at this juncture to do that. What we're doing is looking at the fundamental issue of whether we need to create new traditions, and we do have to dispense with the issue of whether or not a mascot would be part of those new traditions. So you didn't read that we were creating a mascot.
Well, that's what I read in the paper.
No, well, that's not what it said. It said we would be looking at new traditions, including looking at whether or not a mascot would be part of this.
Very
tradition.
Good.
So I just want to emphasize that. I know that went beyond your question, Mr. Chair, but thought it was important to emphasize. And we're in process of naming and putting together a commission on Native American imagery, healing and reconciliation, that is really going to provide an opportunity to do exactly what you're advocating for. We started with the land acknowledgement statement. We also did the Indigenous People Day. And one of the things that I talked to Chief Hopper about is he and his delegation are coming to campus sometime in the next couple of months to talk specifically about what their needs are. What is scholarships, what is outreach, access to our academic resources, is our commitment to not only, as I've said many times, to keep Native people at the core of our mission, and it has to go beyond just symbols, to real actions to not honor Native American heritage and culture.
Sir, before you sit down, may I shake your hand on behalf of the
Alliance? Oh, sure, absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you, Chancellor Jones. Thank you, Ms. McCoy.
Much. I appreciate it.
Our next speaker is James Martin.
Distinguished members of the board, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is James Martin. I'm a junior here at UIC and a captain on the men's gymnastics team. I'm a member of the Honors College, a major in biochemistry, a minor in kinesiology and psychology. I've been proud to represent UIC over the last two seasons. My time competing at UIC has been the best of my life. I work with this group that has now become my family. I never thought I would get to live and compete with anyone who has the same level of love and dedication for this sport, but I found 40 people here who value it just as much as I do. On Friday, August 31st at 8 a.m., both of our teams were brought into a meeting with no explanation. We arrived uncertain of why we were there and concerned, and then we were told very bluntly that this would be our team's last seasons. It felt like something out of a bad dream. 15 years of hard work and sacrifice was being ripped away with no warning. Our coaches, who learned of this decision just 30 minutes before we did, were never consulted during the decision-making process, and as a matter of fact, no consultation with any athletes, donors, coaches, or alumni was attempted during the decision-making process. After that meeting, my coach and teammates selected me to meet with UIC's athletic director, Mr. Garrett Classy, to discuss the decision. I was optimistic to work with him to find a solution. In my first meeting, I tried to express how important gymnastics is to every member of both the men's and women's gymnastics teams. The only way I could explain it is that none of us would be where we are without gymnastics. None of us would be attending UIC. Most of us would not be pursuing the majors or careers that we have chosen. And in fact, some of us may not have been driven to attend college at all. Almost all of us chose UIC without the benefit of an athletic scholarship. The opportunity to be Division I gymnast was our motivation and reward. Gymnastics made us who we are, and we're all better for it. In the sole public statement released by the athletic department regarding the decision, lack of space in athletic facilities, thin staffing, and low budget were all cited as reasons behind these cuts. So in my second meeting, I intended to find out where the resources that we are currently using would be dispersed going forward. I was both surprised and disappointed to find out that there is no plan to reallocate any of these resources. Specifically, Mr. Classia stated there's no plan for the gym space we currently occupy, our support staff, or any of our program's budgeted money. So in my final meeting, Mr. Classia offered us the opportunity to save our programs. He stated that if we raise $25.2 million to fully endow both programs by March 15th of next year, we could have our teams back. No other sports at USC operate under a full endowment, and no other sports at USC have been asked to become self-sustaining. It is entirely unreasonable to ask this of two teams and none of the others. When Mr. Classia became the athletic director 14 months ago, student athletes felt that USC was on a path for success. He spoke about bringing student athletes together as the Flames family and raising more money for our athletic programs to improve our student athlete experience. There have been no large donations or significant fundraising campaigns, and the only concrete action taken by this administration as of today is to abandon the idea of unity by cutting our two programs. Mr. Classia has talked about the importance of a strategic plan to the coaches, yet there is none. He claims that he will have a master plan prepared for athletics in the next 5 to 10 years, yet major decisions are being made now that will forever alter USC athletics. I can speak for all members of the athletic community when I say that we have no confidence that Mr. Classia will make good on his promises. Not only does this negatively affect the future of USC athletics, it disregards over 70 years of success brought to USC by these two programs. The men's team holds USC's only NCAA championships with two Division I titles. This success prompted USC's move into Division I athletics with the men's program first, followed by the entire school. In Division I athletics, the men's program has the highest finish nationally, placing 9th. Both men's programs and women's programs have had incredible success in the recent years at the national and international levels. In the last 3 seasons, the women's team had at least one qualifier to the NCAA regional tournament. Men's gymnastics is the only sport to have ever represented the United States in an international competition, ever. And last year, men's gymnastics was the only sport represented at USC at their respective NCAA championship. I ask you to consider the very real examples of schools similar to USC making similar changes to their athletic departments and failing. Temple University and James Madison University made 7 and 10 cuts to sports respectively to refocus their efforts on other programs. Neither had any improvement in success or attendance. Conversely, Loyola Chicago and Maryland Baltimore County have had great success recently in high-profile situations without making any cuts within their athletic programs. The most successful sports programs in the NCAA offer a wide array of sports, showing that reducing athletic offerings does not correlate with success. As members of the Board of Trustees, you are charged with making sure that decisions made by the university are in the best interests of its students. Standing by this decision, unfounded by any research and with no strategic plan moving forward, would be a mistake. We request that both teams be immediately reinstated and that a study be done to find a universally beneficial solution to move our entire athletic department forward as stewards of the university in a way that befits this wonderful school. If you have any further questions, please consult the summary that was provided to you or contact me for more information. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Our next speaker is William Vavrin.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. My name is William Vavrin. I'm a student in the Teaching of Spanish program here at UIC, and I'm also one of the undergraduate student coordinators for Yes, Apply Illinois. I would like to start by saying how proud we are to be students at the University of Illinois. We are proud that UIUC, in my hometown, was one of the original 37 land-grant universities with the goal of increasing access to higher education. We are proud that UI Springfield is a public affairs university resolved to pioneer leaders in public education. And we are proud that UIC, with our urban mission, is focused on eliminating disparities in health, education, and economic opportunity, because diversity is not an end in itself, but a means to advance access, equity, and inclusion. We also love our chancellor. Yes Apply Illinois is the student-led coalition at the University of Illinois focused on this commitment of access, equity, and inclusion. That's why we worked so hard this year, asking countless administrators, legislators, and community leaders to abolish all questions about past convictions from the University of Illinois admissions process. We even wrote an Illinois Senate resolution, SR 1706. Research indicates that seeing these questions on the application discourages potential students from completing it. In other words, these questions have a chilling effect, discouraging students from even applying. That's what we hear from our fellow students with convictions. This is not just a symbolic thing or a bureaucratic thing. It tells people that you are not welcome here. I want to quote Tori Cohen Bozeman, a Yes Apply student leader and superstar graduate student. Quote, people with convictions do their best to lead positive and productive lives. But we see this question on everything, employment, housing, loans, etc. And we hear no, no, no to everything. When we see this on a college application, we assume it means no. It doesn't make sense to apply. And who are the people who are not welcome to apply? They're our neighbors on the west side, on the south side, all over Illinois. After all, 47% of people in Illinois have a criminal record. Especially people from poor communities. African American and Latinos together make up 32% of the US population, but 56% of the all incarcerated people. By discouraging people from applying, the University of Illinois undermines its mission of access, equity, and inclusion. Please note that this can be done. UIC just removed these questions off the graduate application 3 years ago. And although all these questions are different on all three campuses, on all the applications, students are asked to disclose, describe, and defend their past conviction records and even high school behavioral conduct violations. The UIC Senate faculty researched this and found that these questions, these invasive and humiliating questions, were bad policy. And they, along with the UIC administration, removed them off the graduate application. Now, the Common Application, in response to national pressure, has taken the question off the standard application. The universities that are not committed to advancing access, equity, and inclusion, and that are not focused on eliminating disparities in health, education, and economic opportunity, well, they can choose to leave them. They can choose to keep that on their application. But we are not going to be one of those universities. We are confident that our chancellor will do the right thing, because he does not want to increase the collateral damage of the criminal legal system and limit the potential of incredible and smart people who would most benefit from a college degree. Our chancellor cares deeply about having a university system that serves the state of Illinois and the people of Chicago. And it's not just about acquiring law schools and drafting a master plan, but it's about building relationships with people and communities who would most to gain from a college education. It's too late for us to lead the way, but we can follow. Other state universities like New York. I would like to again to say thank you for the Board of Trustees and to allow me to speak today and just again to have us advance access, equity, and inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vavrin. Our next speaker is Joseph Strickland.
Good afternoon. Excuse me. It is an honor to be able to make my statement to the esteemed Board of Trustees for the University of Illinois. In the next few minutes, it is my goal to give you a basic overview of an academic support program the College of Social Work is looking to create to help former prisoners obtain college degrees to prevent recidivism, increase public safety, and to provide a path for mainstream lifestyles. My name is Joseph Strickland. I'm a researcher and associate director of the Jane Addams Center for Social Policy and Research. As a unit of the Jane Addams College of Social Work, the Policy Center involves faculty and staff in public service and research activities that address the social conditions and needs of urban communities. The center conducts research and evaluation studies, analyzes public policies, disseminates research findings, tests new program models and service delivery strategies, and provides assistance to organizational leaders in implementing policy directives. Dr. Creasy Finney-Hairston is the Dean of the College of Social Work, and she's also the Director of the Policy Center. Both Dean Hairston and I agree that there's enough scholars who are identifying the challenges former prisoners face and why they return to prison. Therefore, our aim is to focus on what works, understanding how successful former prisoners transform their lives to healthy lifestyles. One of the findings is obtaining college degrees decreases the likelihood of recidivism and raises the bar to allow them to socially and economically enter the mainstream. Due to the important role of higher education in transforming the lives of former prisoners, we are looking to create an academic resource center that will, that will provide former prisoners who are seeking college degrees academic support, a strong peer network, social capital, internships, and assisting with helping to resolve issues that many college students face, such as housing and financial aid. We have been doing this work without funding since 2011. To date, we have mentored 22 former prisoners. There are 12 former prisoners currently in an undergrad program. 5 have obtained undergrad degrees. 5 are enrolled in graduate school. And 3 of the graduates now hold leadership positions in well-established social service organizations. As we look to establish this center, we would love the opportunity to help those former prisoners that qualify get their degrees at UIC. We understand that UIC students have been pursuing the removal of the questions regarding criminal background on admission applications. We both applaud and support that effort. The Policy Center would be more than willing to work with the administration to help design programs or services for the formerly incarcerated on campus. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Strickland.
Mr. Chairman, hi. Can we get a report sometime for the trustees? I'd like to gain some clarity around the gymnastics issue.
Okay, sure.
At some point.
Guess that falls on your turf.
I'm sorry. What's the question?
At some point. Not right now. At some point, we'd like to have a report.
Absolutely.
To get some clarity around the gymnastics
issue. There is a written report that was sent to the board. The athletic director has prepared an answer point by point about everything that has been raised. So I'll be happy. It's coming to you.
Thank you.
Our last speaker is Claudia De Bruin, and I hope I pronounced your name correctly.
Hi, everyone. I'm Claudia De Bruin. I'm an undergraduate student here at UIC. I'm originally from Elk Grove Village, a nearby Chicago suburb. I'm a senior here studying philosophy as a pre-med student. And I'm also the president of the Roosevelt Institute, a nonpartisan student policy organization and think tank that works to strengthen public accountability over our public institutions. Last year, we implemented a campus-wide blueprint project that worked with UIC students in implementing policies at the campus level. We partnered with the Arab American Cultural Center to add Southwestern Arab and Northern African demographic questions on university forums. We advocated with the Disability Cultural Center for a wheelchair accessible entrance. This year, we are focusing on one of the most fundamental commitments of the Roosevelt legacy, the importance of higher education as a public good. Franklin Roosevelt upheld education as a great equalizer and understood that education is the foundation of a true democracy. In facing the crisis of the Great Depression, FDR invested in public education and infused federal agencies with an educational mission. He did not allow America to lose a generation of people to illiteracy because they were poor. The civic crisis of our time is not the Great Depression, but mass incarceration. For decades, millions of Americans, especially from poor communities, have been imprisoned at astronomical rates. In 2009, Pew determined that 1 in 100 Americans were in prison. Currently, 1 in 55 people are under parole supervision. In Illinois, 47% of adults have a criminal record. Mass incarceration has devastated people who have lacked the protection of wealth and class, especially poor, Black, and Latino communities, targeted by policing, prosecution, and sentencing, while dealing with disproportionate poverty and crime. Unbelievably and finally, the one thing that our country now agrees on is that the criminal justice system is broken and mass incarceration was a catastrophic mistake. We recognize the harm to individuals and communities that are targeted by these policies, and we must act to bring people back into full civic life. The American public education system has always held the promise of civic and economic opportunity regardless of background or means. It is foundational to economic and social mobility. That's why there is ongoing public pressure for colleges and universities to do their part. The U.S. Department of Education, the Association of American Colleges and Universities, and the American Association of Community Colleges have all urged colleges and universities to remove questions about past convictions from admissions applications. Senator Dick Durbin just worked to introduce the Federal Beyond the Box for Higher Education Act to encourage universities to ban the box. Why? Because by having these questions, universities are adding to the stigma of past criminal justice involvement and compounding racial and economic inequality. Conviction questions came with the advent of mass incarceration, and they produce new barriers to higher education. They threatened the accessibility of the University of Illinois as a public institution because it could discourage applications from the people who would most benefit from an education. Criminal records should not be societal banishment, and there should not be gatekeeping at the doors of higher education. FDR saw that educational inequality leads to economic inequality, but he also saw that economic inequality leads to educational inequality, and that the pursuit of knowledge is itself a form of freedom. He said, "The truth is found when men and women are free to pursue it. And great music, great literature, great art, and the wonders of science are and should be open to all." Someone applying to our school is asking for the privilege of being in a classroom and learning. There's no reason we need to know about their past record to determine if they are qualified to learn. The Roosevelt Institute asks the university and the Board of Trustees today to uphold our mission as a public institution and to truly invite all people of Illinois to reach their full potential as civic, social, and economic actors. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Claudia.